Hi, this is Chris Kepler with Does This Happen to You? The weekly podcast where we explore our daily anomalies, bringing to life short stories by fantastic writers never heard in audio format. A weekly mini audio book about life and befuddlement just for you. This week we have two stories from B.B. Nicholson, who you'll find on Medium.com. And here is My Toilet Tour of Europe. Where was Starbucks when I needed them? I could have used their new bathroom policy when I embarked on my toilet tour of Europe. There are 868 Starbucks in the United Kingdom, 157 in Germany, and 28 in Greece. Had they thrown their bathroom doors wide open and enticed me with unfettered access and a fresh toilet paper roll, I would have located every Starbucks in Europe and mapped out my sightseeing strategy accordingly. Instead, I plunged heedlessly into my travel adventure without an adequate plan. As an American, I have never thought much about bathrooms. Gotta go? Pull off the highway at the next McDonald's. I've used bathrooms in Walgreens, Walmart, Target, Quick Trip, Macy's, and Burger King, to name a few. I never thought to ask permission, just waltz in, took care of business, and left. So arriving in Europe and discovering that toilets were a lot less ubiquitous and accessible was a culture shock. Every traveler has one or two great toilet stories. Foreign toilets can be traumatic, but they are one of those little things that can make travel so much more interesting than staying at home. Rick Steves. In Greece, I climbed a rocky hill to the Acropolis, consumed two glasses of wine, and wandered around Athens for a couple of hours when the need for a bathroom became urgent. I entered a cafe, headed for the back, and was stopped midway by a frozen-faced waitress. Despite a language barrier, she got the point across that bathrooms were available only if I dined there. By this time, things were getting desperate. I took the extreme measure of entering a clothing boutique and paying 17 euros for a blouse I didn't want in hopes of buying toilet privileges. It didn't work. A tall, beautiful girl collected my euros, then became as frozen-faced as the waitress and directed me to a public bathroom four blocks away, 12 blocks after I got lost trying to read Greek signs. By the time I got to Italy, I had a UTI, probably from holding it in during my 12-block Athens trek. Desperate times call for desperate measures. I got to be an expert at sauntering into a restaurant, acting like I was a paying customer, slipping into the bathroom, and then hightailing it out before the Italian police force could be summoned. Not only were public bathrooms as few and far between in Italy as they had been in Greece, I had to pay to use them. Since payment was in euros and I didn't always have my glasses when I was on my way to the toilet, I'm sure from the overly enthusiastic thanks from some of the bathroom guardians, those men and women who sit outside taking your money, that I mistook a $10 coin from a 50-cent coin more than once. But what did I care? I had found a WC. Paying to use a public WC is a European custom that irks many Americans. But isn't it really worth a few coins, considering the cost of water, maintenance, and cleanliness? And you're probably in no state to argue anyway. Rick Steves. With so few toilets available, you would think they would be more uniform. But in Europe, there are as many different flushing mechanisms as there are flavors of gelato. You find pull strings instead of handles, buttons on top of the tank, pump toilets that require precision to get the job done, and toilets with flushing mechanisms so elusive that I never found them. When I was on a German tour bus, a teenage girl disappeared in the toilet for upwards of an hour. Finally, her mother pounded on the door, and the girl emerged, shamefaced, admitting she couldn't figure out how to flush. In Great Britain, you'll likely come across the pump toilet with a flushing handle that doesn't kick in unless you push it just right. Too hard or too soft, and it won't go. Be decisive, but not ruthless. Rick Steves. But my worries are now over following the Starbucks debacle. All I need to do is plan my sightseeing so that a Starbucks is always only a few blocks away, unless their open to all bathroom policy doesn't apply in European stores. Then I'm back to square one. I'll have to take Rick Steves' advice and learn to be more European. And our second story of the week by B.B. Nicholson, A Tale of Two Snakes. Yesterday, I thought I saw a snake. I was watching the sun poke through a billowy raft of clouds when I leaned over the deck rail and spotted what was either a snake or a stick in the backyard. Long and blacker than the surrounding roots, it crooked oddly over mountain laurel, leading me to conclude it must be a snake, but it didn't move, so I decided it was a stick. I watched for another 5 minutes, eyes glued to the motionless dark shape draped incongruously across the bush. My eyesight isn't that great, and I didn't have on my glasses, so I couldn't tell for sure what it was. But being blessed, or cursed, with a boatload of curiosity, I decided to find out. Slipping on flip-flops, I plodded carefully down wooden steps that carved a steep, irregular path through our yard to the lake. Halfway down, I stared at what I had now decided was a stick. Just to be sure, I hurled a rock at it. The snake didn't move. Ah, so you're a stick after all, I sighed, relieved, and moved closer to retrieve the stick that resembled a snake. I was 5 feet away when the stick slithered, tongue flicking, and moved in a slow, ominous glide from the mountain laurel toward me. I turned and bolted up steep steps, flip-flop slapping like gunshot, not stopping until I was safely inside, door shut, chest heaving, heart hammering. My snake encounter reminded me of another time when I had lived with a snake in the house for weeks or maybe months without knowing it. My sons had concocted a scheme. The oldest one ordered a snake online to be delivered by UPS and enlisted the help of his younger brother. Whoever was home at the time of delivery was to answer the door, abscond with a snake before questions could be asked, and leave me, the mother who might object to allowing a snake to coexist in the same house with us, in the dark. The odd thing was, their scheme worked. They got their snake, and I didn't have a clue. The oldest son kept it in a terrarium in his room. He must have draped the glass enclosure with towels when he thought I was nearby, because I never saw the snake. But there was one downside my sons had not anticipated. The snake had to be fed live mice. This might not have been a problem, except that my oldest son had a soft heart. Just to give you an example, one day when we were driving home from soccer practice, a bright red cardinal stood motionless in the road beside its mate, which had been struck by a car. My son, about 10 years old at the time, said, "Why is that bird standing in the road?" "His mate got run over," I replied. "He doesn't want to leave her." "That's so sad," my son replied, tears pooling behind his glasses. A few years later, he dropped one wriggling white mouse into the terrarium. The snake struck with lightning speed, consumed the helpless creature, and my son was horrified. He could not bring himself to give the snake another mouse. He never fed the snake again. One night, the snake, probably from starvation and sheer desperation, escaped and slithered into the adjacent bedroom where my youngest son was sleeping. It crawled into his bed and then, horror of horrors, bit him on the chin. He woke to this nightmare, a snake coiled on his chest within striking distance and having already struck. The next day, my sons took the snake, skin sagging and loose from weeks of starvation, to a local pet store where the owner took it off their hands and remarked that it had almost died in their care, but he would have it fat and sleek again in no time. Today, my oldest son has a beard, runs a real estate company, and still has a soft heart towards animals, children, and hopefully his mother. My youngest son earned his PhD, started his own tech company, and owns no reptiles. I only learned recently of their snake escapade. Childhood can be the best of times and the worst of times, depending on your perspective. sneaking a snake into the house, keeping it hidden, and then sneaking it out again must have required some subterfuge and planning that ranks right up there with the best of pulling one over on Mom. Being traumatized by the nature of the new pet's feeding habits must have been disappointing, to say the least. I'm glad I didn't learn about some of the things my children did until they were grown. To hear them tell it, there were days they almost burned the house down, blew up the microwave, wrecked the car, in this case one of them actually did, or escaped unscathed from predicaments that would have sent any mother into anxiety overdrive. Sometimes it's better not to know too much. It pays not to step any closer to examine a stick that could be a snake. Thanks so much for listening. If you like this story or my podcast, please share and let me know. And if you want to hear multiple stories like this multiple times per week, please become my podcast patron. Just click the link on my Podbean page.